ويسألونك عن ذي القرنين قل سأتلو عليكم منه ذكرا.
O Muhammad, peace be upon him, they ask you about Zulkarnain. Say, I will give you an account of him. O Muhammad, peace be upon him, they ask you about Zulkarnain. The word va and, which precedes the query about Zulkarnain, certainly connects the two parts of the verse. This makes it clear that the story of Khizr and Moses, peace be upon them, was also narrated in response to the questions that had been asked. This further corroborates our contention that the Meccan unbelievers put a number of questions to the Prophet, peace be upon him, in order to test whether he had access to any ordinary source of knowledge or not. Say, I will give you an account of him. The identity of Zulkarnain has long been a contentious issue. Early commentators on the Quran were generally inclined to believe that it referred to Alexander. The characteristics attributed to Zulkarnain in the Quran, however, hardly apply to Alexander. In the light of the latest historical evidence, contemporary commentators on the Quran are inclined to believe that Zulkarnain signifies the Persian emperor Cyrus. This, in any case, seems more plausible. Nevertheless, the information available to date does not enable us to form a definitive opinion concerning Zulkarnain's identity. Quranic statements concerning Zulkarnain clearly bring out the following four points. 1. The title Zulkarnain, literally the two-horned, was at least familiar to the Jews. This is evident from the fact that they had instigated the Meccan unbelievers to ask the Prophet, peace be upon him, about him. One must, therefore, inevitably turn to Jewish literature to find out who this person was or to establish which was the kingdom known as the two-horned. 2. The Quranic description also makes it quite clear that Zulkarnain must have been a great ruler as well as a conqueror, for his conquests covered a vast stretch of territory extending from the east to the west, and on the third side extending either to the north or the south. There were only a few such outstanding figures before the revelation of the Quran. So we must apply our search for the other characteristics of Zulkarnain to any one of these figures. 3. The title Zulkarnain may aptly be used for a ruler who, being concerned with the defense of his kingdom for the assaults of Gog and Magog, had a strong protective wall constructed across a mountain pass. In order to determine who that person was, it is necessary to find out whom the words Gog and Magog refer. It is also necessary to find out whether any such wall was ever built adjacent to the habitat of Gog and Magog, and if it was, by whom. 4. In addition to all this, the Quran describes Zulkarnain as a God-conscious and just ruler. In fact, in the Quranic portrayal of him, these stand out as his dominant characteristics. Let us consider the first clue regarding Zulkarnain, that he was known to the Jews. Now, the information available in Jewish sources seems to apply to Cyrus, for according to the Bible, Daniel saw the united empire of Media and Persia before the rise of the Greeks in the form of a two-horned ram. See Daniel 8:3-20. There was much talk of the two-horned one among the Jews, for it was he who shattered the Babylonian empire to pieces and brought about the liberation of the Israelites. See Bani Israel 17, note 8 above. The second clue also seems to a very large extent to apply to Cyrus, though not fully. His conquests undoubtedly extended as far as Asia Minor and the Syrian coastline in the west and Balkh in the east. So far, however, we have not found any trace of a north or south expedition by Cyrus, even though the Quran categorically mentions a third expedition by Zulkarnain. See verse 83. The possibility that Cyrus did undertake such an expedition, however, cannot be ruled out, for according to historical sources, Cyrus's empire extended as far as Caucasia in the north. As far as the third clue is concerned, we know almost for sure that Gog and Magog were the wild tribes of Russia and northern China who were variously known as Tartars, Mongols, Huns, and Scythians, who had carried out various raids against civilized lands. We also know that the bulwarks of Darband and Daryal were built in the southern regions of Caucasia, so as to ensure defense against the incursions of these wild tribes. It has not been fully established historically, however, that those bulwarks were built by Cyrus. Arriving at the last clue, this applies most to Cyrus of all the conquerors of the world. For Cyrus was widely praised for being a just ruler, so much so that even his enemies praised him for this. The Bible's book of Ezra portrays him as a God-worshipping and God-fearing king who liberated the Israelites precisely by virtue of his devotion to God, and that he also ordered the Temple of Solomon in Jerusalem to be rebuilt for the worship of God. On the basis of all the above, we would be quite justified in concluding that of all past conquerors, Cyrus comes closest to the Quranic description of Zulkarnain. However, the evidence so far available to us does not conclusively establish that Cyrus was indeed the Zulkarnain of the Quran. Nevertheless, no other conqueror comes as close to the Quranic characterization of Zulkarnain as Cyrus. Historically speaking, Cyrus was a Persian ruler whose rise to fame began around 549 BC. Within a few years, he seized the kingdoms of Media and Lydia, Asia Minor, and later, in 539 BC, he also conquered Babylon. This made him the supreme ruler of the region, as there was no powerful kingdom left to oppose him. His subsequent conquests extended to Sindh, Sugd, present-day Turkestan, Egypt and Libya on one side, and to Thrace, Macedonia, Caucasia, and Khwarezm in the north on the other. For all practical purposes, the civilized world of the day was under his sway.
إِنَّا مَكَّنَّا لَهُ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَآتَيْنَاهُ مِنْ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ سَبَبًا.
We granted him power in the land and endowed him with all kinds of resources.
فَأَتْبَعَ سَبَبًا.
He set out westwards on an expedition.
حَتَّى إِذَا بَلَغَ مَغْرِبَ الشَّمْسِ وَجَدَهَا تَغْرُبُ فِي عَيْنٍ حَمِئَةٍ وَوَجَدَ عِنْدَهَا قَوْمًا. قُلْنَا يَا ذَا الْقَرْنَيْنِ إِمَّا أَنْ تُعَذِّبَ وَإِمَّا أَنْ تَتَّخِذَ فِيهِمْ حُسْنًا.
Until, when he reached the very limits of where the sun sets, he saw it setting in dark turbid waters. And nearby, he met a people. We said, O Zulkarnain, you have the power to punish or to treat them with kindness. Until, when he reached the very limits of where the sun sets, the limit where the sun sets, as pointed out by Ibn Kathir, signifies the extreme limit of the west. It does not mean the actual place where the sun sets. Thus, what the verse implies is that Zulkarnain conquered one territory after another in a westward direction until he reached the very end of the landmass and beyond which lay the sea. He saw it setting in dark turbid waters. When the sun set in that land, it seemed as if it had set in the blackish muddy waters of the sea. If we are to assume that Cyrus was indeed Zulkarnain, then the reference would be to the western coast at the point where the Aegean Sea splits into several small gulfs. This is also supported by the Quranic use of the word Ain instead of Bahr, since the former word is more appropriately used to denote a lake or gulf rather than sea. And nearby, he met a people. We said, O Zulkarnain, you have the power to punish or to treat them with kindness. The present statement does not necessarily mean that God communicated this directive to Zulkarnain by means of revelation, wahi, or inspiration, ilham. Had that been the case, it would necessarily mean that Zulkarnain was a nabi, prophet, or muhaddath, one to whom God spoke. It is quite possible that no actual communication took place and that it amounted to no more than making a statement of fact. This indeed seems more likely. For the situation obtaining at that time was that Zulkarnain had just established his control over that territory. For instance, that the conquered nation was firmly in his grip. At this stage, God put a question to Zulkarnain's conscience. How should he treat these helpless people? Being in full control, he could either treat them with injustice or treat them with grace and magnanimity. The situation was, thus, a test for his moral caliber.
قَالَ أَمَّا مَنْ ظَلَمَ فَسَوْفَ نُعَذِّبُهُ ثُمَّ يُرَدُّ إِلَىٰ رَبِّهِ فَيُعَذِّبُهُ عَذَابًا نُكْرًا.
He said, "We will chastise him who does wrong, whereafter he will be returned to his Lord, and he will chastise him grievously."
وَأَمَّا مَنْ آمَنَ وَعَمِلَ صَالِحًا فَلَهُ جَزَاءً الْحُسْنَى وَسَنَقُولُ لَهُ مِنْ أَمْرِنَا يُسْرًا.
But as for him who believes and acts righteously, his will be a goodly reward, and we shall enjoin upon him only mild commands.
ثُمَّ أَتْبَعَ سَبَبًا.
Then he set out on another expedition. Until he reached the limit where the sun rises, and he found it rising on a people whom we had provided no shelter from it. Until he reached the limit where the sun rises, and he found it rising on a people whom we had provided no shelter from it. Zulkarnain went forth eastwards, conquering one land after another until he reached a territory which marked the end of the civilized world. The lands ahead were inhabited by slave nations who did not have the skill to construct houses, let alone even know how to pitch tents.
كَذَلِكَ وَقَدْ أَحَطْنَا بِمَا لَدَيْهِ خُبَرًا.
Thus was the state of those people, and we encompassed in knowledge all concerning Zulkarnain. Then he set out on another expedition. Until when he reached a place between the two mountains, he found beside the mountains a people who scarcely understood anything. Until when he reached a place between the two mountains, the Quran later points out that the land beyond the two mountains was that of Gog and Magog. See verse 94. Hence, the mountains mentioned in the present verse are bound to have been part of the range located between the Caspian Sea and the Black Sea. He found beside the mountains a people who scarcely understood anything. The language of these people was almost foreign to Zulkarnain and his companions. Being a wild people, they neither knew any other language nor did others know theirs.
قَالُوا يَا ذَا الْقَرْنَيْنِ إِنَّ يَأْجُوجَ وَمَأْجُوجَ مُفْسِدُونَ فِي الْأَرْضِ فَهَلْ نَجْعَلُ لَكَ خَرْجًا عَلَىٰ أَن تَجْعَلَ بَيْنَنَا وَبَيْنَهُمْ سَدًّا.
They said, "O Zulkarnain, Gog and Magog are spreading corruption in this land. So shall we pay you taxes on the understanding that you will set up a barrier between us and them?" They said, "O Zulkarnain, Gog and Magog." We stated earlier, see note 62 above, that Gog and Magog were the wild peoples which inhabited the northeastern region of Asia. They constantly carried out predatory raids against civilized lands, pouring over both Asia and Europe like tidal waves. In Genesis, see chapter 10, their ancestry is traced to Japheth, son of Noah, peace be upon him. This view is also shared by Muslim historians. The book of Ezekiel, see chapters 38-9, states that their land was comprised of Meshech, presently Moscow, and Tubal, presently Tubalsek. The Jewish historian Josephus identifies them with the Scythians, who inhabited the area lying north and east of the Black Sea. According to Jerome, the Magog lived to the north of Caucasia, near the Caspian Sea.
قال ما مكنني فيه ربي خير فأعينوني بقوة أجعل بينكم وبينهم ردما.
He answered, "Whatever my Lord has granted me is good enough, but help me with your labor, and I will erect a rampart between you and them." He answered, "Whatever my Lord has granted me is good enough, but help me with your labor, and I will erect a rampart between you and them." Zulkarnain was conscious that as a ruler, it was his duty to safeguard his people against predatory invaders. It was not proper for him, therefore, to impose any additional tax on his people for that purpose. The treasures of the land, which had already been entrusted to him by God, were sufficient to arrange for his people's defense. This defense would, however, still require that his people should provide him with physical help.
آتوني زبر الحديد حتى إذا ساوى بين الصدفين قال انفخوا حتى إذا جعله نارا قال آتوني أفرغ عليه قطرا.
Bring me ingots of iron. Then after he had filled up the space between the two mountainsides, he said, "Light a fire and ply bellows." When he had made it red like fire, he said, "Bring me molten copper, which I may pour on it." Such was the rampart that Gog and Magog could not scale, nor could they pierce it.
قال هذا رحمة من ربي فإذا جاء وعد ربي جعله دكاء وكان وعد ربي حقا.
Zulkarnain said, "This is a mercy from my Lord. But when the time of my Lord's promise shall come, he will level the rampart with the ground. My Lord's promise always comes true." Zulkarnain said, "This is a mercy from my Lord, but when the time of my Lord's promise shall come, he will level the rampart with the ground." The other point made by Zulkarnain concerned the protective arrangements he had made. He said that even though he had built a strong protective wall to the best of his ability, there was no reason to believe that it would endure forever. As long as God willed, it would remain intact, but when the appointed time for its destruction came, nothing could avert its destruction. The expression, "the appointed time of my Lord," is very meaningful. This refers both to the time set by God for the destruction of the wall, as well as the time appointed for the death and extinction of all, for instance, the last day. My Lord's promise always comes true. This marks the conclusion of Zulkarnain's story, the story itself being narrated in response to a query put to the Prophet, peace be upon him, by the Meccan unbelievers so as to test him. The Quran, however, employs this story just as it did the stories of the people of the cave and Moses, peace be upon him, and Khizr, to drive home a moral. The Quran emphasizes that Zulkarnain, whose glorious achievements were known to the people of the book, was not simply a conqueror, but also someone who believed in monotheism and the hereafter, and who was just and generous in his dealings with his subjects. Moreover, Zulkarnain was not a petty person who puffed up with pride as soon as he attained any success.
وَتَرَكْنَا بَعْضَهُمْ يَوْمَئِذٍ يَمُوجُ فِي بَعْضٍ وَنُفِخَ فِي الصُّورِ فَجَمَعْنَاهُمْ جَمْعًا.
And on that day, we shall let some of them surge like waves against others, and the trumpet shall be blown. Then we shall gather them all together. And on that day, refers to the day of resurrection. Zulkarnain had alluded to the day of resurrection as a day that is bound to come about because God had so decided. What is being said here is in that context and is an addition to the statement made by Zulkarnain. See verse 98 above.
وَعَرَضْنَا جَهَنَّمَ يَوْمَئِذٍ لِلْكَافِرِينَ عَرْضًا.
That will be the day we shall place hell before the unbelievers.
الذين كانت أعينهم في غطاء عن ذكري وكانوا لا يستطيعون سمعا.
Whose eyes had become blind against my admonition and who were utterly disinclined to hear it.